Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Today on Mages, Sages, and Seers, I'm proud to be speaking with Awen Dawn. She recently authored a book, Paganism for Prisoners, Connecting to the Magic Within with Llewellyn Worldwide. And I'm really looking forward to talking to her about her book. Greetings and welcome, Awen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. This is an awesome book. I started reading it earlier in the week or before the weekend, and it's very exciting. It contains a lot of very interesting information, interesting perspectives. So I'm looking forward to asking you some questions. Now, you are giving back, it seems, that you received help in your spiritual journey at a particular low point, and paganism helped you save your life and turn it around. Can you talk about that a little bit, that transformation?
Absolutely. So, I've known that I was pagan for a long time, but I kind of paid lip service for a great many years, had all the stickers, were the granddaughters of the witches you couldn't burn and, wore black and I felt like the connection was missing for me. And then I went to prison, and this is where I actually really got into my faith. There were a handful of books about paganism in the library, which unfortunately not all libraries have, but I was lucky that they did. And every day I was leaving the facility and going out to work in the fields and digging in the earth, and the sun was shining on me and that the air was blowing and I could feel nature all around me. And it was when I was in here that I made this I made the commitment to study everything I could. And, I took those books, and I still keep my first book of shadows from the OC. It was these little blue books that you can buy on commissary. And I would copy down anything I found interesting. And that's really where I started to connect again. And then I just followed through on that when I got out.
And it seems that after you finished your parole and you were able to go back in, you did that without much waiting. So your purpose seems to have been born during this time as well.
Oh, absolutely. I tend to notice that when I'm doing something that the gods approve of, that there's not a lot of obstacles in my way. And so when I was out on parole, I found a teacher and worked with her, and I completed my first degree initiation and then my second degree initiation. And then I was able to start going in, and I always jokingly said that I got to teach witchcraft to inmates, and they absolutely loved seeing the light go off when they saw that recognition, when they saw that ability to empower themselves to actually do something to change their life instead of just being a victim of circumstance. And it really inspired me to write this book, because I'm only one person. I have a big personality and sometimes seem like eight people, but I'm really only one person. And this was how I could get that course to as many pagans that were incarcerated as possible.
Now, aside from having been an inmate and being a pagan, you've been many other things besides during the course of your life. What made you focus your ministry on pagans?
It's because it saved me. I really think that if I hadn't had those books when I was in prison, and I hadn't gotten out and found a teacher and continued with my initiations, I really think that I wouldn't have had the support that I needed. I very easily could have been a recidivism statistic. I mean, most people are. Like, statistically speaking, once you go to prison, you're likely to go back. And for me, it was the empowerment I found in paganism that really helped me not go back. I was like, I get to be responsible for my own choices and for my own actions. And that meant something to me. And, you know, I can't control if that means something to other people, but I can inspire them and let them know that it's possible. And that's the whole goal.
And your book is not just for prisoners, though. It seems to be addressed to everybody. And I learned a lot from the parts of your book that dealt with inmates. But there's a lot of information in there that's general for anyone who's interested in paganism or who's a pagan.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can do, if you can practice your faith without the tools, you can incorporate the tools at any time. But there's something really personal and powerful and empowering about just standing in front of your altar, whatever that may be, you know, whether you're incarcerated or whether you're on the outside and you get to have an actual altar, you know, standing there in front of the gods, just you and them, you know. And I love the pageantry, you know, I love my athame and I love my cloak and everything. But sometimes I just need to stand there and have a conversation with the gods and just be there and just be present with them. So absolutely, even though the incarcerated population was, you know, who it's initially written for, I also had in the back of my mind how other people could use this book, how I would want to use this book. If I knew nothing about paganism and I picked up this book and, like, you know, whether a person is like living under their parents' roof and can't be out of the broom closet, or, you know, whether they're super out of the broom closet, that those things, if there's information in paganism for prisoners that everybody can use, because it's about doing that internal work. It's about doing that shadow work, that introspective work, that really building and developing yourself as a person. And so from that aspect, I think anybody could pick up this book and find useful information.
Oh, it's full of useful information. You've succeeded wonderfully on that count. Now, everyone, for whatever creative project they put into the world, they have certain hopes, certain dreams. The creative project is like your child. What are your hopes and dreams for this book? What type of effect do you want to have? What type of transformations would you like it to trigger?
If even one person picks up this book and is able to actively make changes in their life, then it'll be successful. I mean, ideally, I would love for everybody to pick up this book and everybody to change and, like, everybody become their best self and the best version of their self. But if one person doesn't go back to prison because of this book, it'll be worth it 1,000 times over.
Yeah. Very, very true.
I mean, that's what it was for me when I picked up books in prison. You know, it was that aha moment of, oh, I don't have to go back to prison. And, like, nobody told me that. Nobody told me that. So I wanted people to know that they have a choice in the matter. And it's tough sometimes because, you know, society doesn't really reach out a helping hand to people who have a felony or 5 or 6, you know, possible.
It certainly is. And people who are incarcerated face tremendous barriers. Would you care to go over some of those?
Oh, absolutely. So I got released from prison in 2013. And for the rest of my life, if I go and apply for a job, I have to be prepared to have the talk. Like, oh, I have felonies, you know? And that was almost a decade ago, and I am still my DOC number. And even more recently, you know, you have to consider when people get out of prison, a lot of people, the houses that they go back to are maybe not supportive. You know, if there's been a lot of codependency or drug use or violence or gang interactions or whatever initially led them down their path of incarceration, you know, and then you're putting them back into that environment, you're setting them up to fail. Now, even if you put people in a supportive environment, you still have to consider that they're required to have a job. Now, not only are they required to have a job, They're required to have a job. They're required to pass a background check for that job. They're required to have a job that's going to allow them to leave early for UAs, attend classes. All their money is going to go to UAs and classes and restitution. I don't know what rental prices are like where you're at, but in the city I live in, it's very difficult to afford a place to live on your own. And so, like, if you're looking for a roommate, you have to get the roommate approved by your parole officer, of course. But if you're looking for a roommate, the connections you're going to have is somebody who has a past with incarceration or other people who are going to have similar past, you know. And once you go beyond this, if you look further, majority of people who are incarcerated have trauma. And you know, I'm not talking about, like, they didn't get a puppy when they were 8 years old. I mean serious trauma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this doesn't get addressed. Sometimes there will be classes, you know, or counseling or things like that. But, you know, they've been incarcerated for however many years without any of these issues getting addressed. And there's also this element of physical ailments, you know, mental health issues that haven't been addressed. And so, like, you take people from prison where they've got into this routine and then they get out. And, like, I can tell you from personal experience, it's overwhelming when you get out of prison and you walk into the real world. Like, you don't know what to do. And, you know, there's certain resources, you know, that there's things that can be done, but, like, the job training that people get while they're in prison, it's not for everybody. It's something. It's a start, you know. It's good to come out and have a cosmetology license or be able to be a flagger or things like that, but it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. There's just, and then the societal pressure. When I had my first teacher, it was about 6 months before she knew that I had felonies, because it's just not something that you feel comfortable talking about in society, because you tell somebody you're a felon, they think, you know, you've murdered 178 people, or, you know, and even if you have, I believe that people can change, but they think the worst, you know, and most people, it relates to substance use. It relates to poverty. It relates to systemic racism, you know, and these are the things that aren't getting addressed. So when a person gets out on parole, like, they have to figure it out. And how do we expect people to figure it out if we don't, like, give them guidance?
So things have not improved, it seems. I used to be involved in the human services field for decades. It seems that attempts were made to help people who had been incarcerated or who were still incarcerated. But it doesn't sound, from what you're telling me, like any real progress has been made.
There are some things that have changed. There was the Ban the Box initiative here in Colorado. So they can no longer ask on a job application if you have a felony. And, I mean, it's a small step, but at least it's a step in the right direction.
Yes.
You know, they can still ask. They can still do a background check, all of these things. And there are starting to come up. And I think we're slowly starting to see more awareness come to the issues behind incarceration. It's a very slow process, because you have to go through, like, so much legislation and, you know, to get any real change, and it takes time.
Unfortunately, it does. But it sounds like you're on top of all that. Are you involved in any activist groups to help people who are incarcerated and bring about reform?
You know, I have looked into some, but currently with COVID, I'm not able to go and volunteer. And that's where my primary focus has always been, is volunteering in the prisons and going and doing that one-on-one. I do have some projects in the works, though. I'm currently putting together a training workshop for pagans who want to go and take a program into the prisons, because I think that's why we don't have more pagan volunteers in prison, is they're like, well, what would I teach them? You know, especially if you're self-taught, you know, if you didn't come through a coven, you might be like, oh, I don't really know what to teach. So that's something I'm working on. And then there's also Paganism on Parole, which is my second book that'll be released in November.
Awesome.
And there's several notes in there to the parole officers themselves. You know, things about, you know, if you have to search somebody's house, don't touch their altar. Here's why it's important. Here's what you can do instead. So I'm using my voice to initiate change.
That is fantastic, and that'll help a lot of people. Now, a lot of folks, just like they have negative images about the people who've been incarcerated, there's a lot of, you know, weird images about people who are pagans. And
absolutely.
They have all sorts of ideas on what that means. And, you know, basically, once they get to know you, they'll ask you those questions. But it never ceases to surprise me that this is what they have inside their minds. But, okay. What exactly about paganism drew you to it? You mentioned this affinity with the gods and the goddesses and doing what they wanted you to do. How did that impulse first come up, and what exactly is it about paganism that empowers you so?
Well, I was pagan before I even knew what to call it. I think everybody's born pagan until we learn something else, you know? So back in Sunday school, right? I was raised Southern Baptist. So back in Sunday school, I always remembered like asking the questions, like if we're made in the image of God, then why don't men have babies? Like it seemed like the most couldn't get an answer for it. And so like, this is when I started to notice that like, and I felt really, I didn't know anybody else in the world believed in like the gods and goddesses. Like I thought I was some weird kid and there was something wrong with me. And then when I was in my teenage years, I found, I picked up a book. It just mysteriously showed up and I was like, oh my God, other people believe this. And I felt that first inkling of coming home, you know, everything I read in that book, I was like, this is what I believe. This makes sense. Oh my gosh, I am not crazy. Oh my God, like, thank you. And it was validating and it was empowering. And I think one of the things that's so incredible about paganism is, you know, there's not this, oh, well, you can't be this, or you can't be this, or you can't be this. Like, you can be whatever you want, you know? And there's not this whole waiting your whole lifetime and then you die and then there's this retribution after you die. You get your comeuppance now. You know, if you do something messed up, you pay for it and then you move on. You learn your lesson and you move on, or you don't learn your lesson and you repeat it until you learn it and then you move on. And I think it gives people a lot of hope because it's not, oh, forever, you know, you're a sinner or you're a bad person, or like, you know, you do something bad, you have to live with it forever. And when you consider people who are incarcerated, like getting to learn their lessons and move on, like, thank you. Thank you for believing I can be something other than my DOC number. Because like so many other places in society, you know, like, oh, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to go to school and go to college and marry and, you know, have the kids and have your job and work your job for 40 years. And then at the end of 40 years, you retire and then you get to live your life. And that's not for everybody. I don't even think it's for most people. We just trick ourselves into thinking it is.
Very good point. And is it difficult being a pagan in prison? I'm sure it's more difficult than being a Baptist to be incarcerated.
I never had any real problems. I mean, it wasn't like the first thing I told everybody, but I actually had a bigger problem with it when I was in substance use treatment. You know, that's where like they threw a hissy fit because I didn't want to go to church with everybody. And they told me that the gods weren't what I believed in, that that was just something I was interested in. Like when I went to prison, like everybody's just there to do their time, at least at the one I was at. Like everybody's just there to do their time. You don't mess with them. They don't mess with you. When I was in a two-man room, my cellie was even Catholic, and it was never a problem. Like I woke up early one morning to hear Latin church services because I like the sound of Latin. I think it sounds cool. So the biggest difficulties, though, is that you're not always allowed to meet. If you are allowed to meet, it's either on full moons or Sabbaths, not both. You have to have a volunteer. You're not allowed a lot of things. Like we had candles that we obviously couldn't light, you know, we weren't allowed to have an athame. But you know, some things you can have, like you can have a salt cup, you can have a chalice, and it's just this small little chalice that's made of wood, but we were allowed to have it. And you're allowed to have a wand, which is basically they go and cut a twig for you, and that's your wand. And in the most basic way, that is a wand. So it could have been worse, but it's still not an experience I would recommend anybody have. But I never had to defend myself because of my faith.
That's very encouraging to hear. And that's why paganism is one of the fastest growing faiths in our country.
It could be. And it's not just the fastest growing faith in our country. It's the fastest growing faith in DOC too. In prisons, the number of people who classify, they lump everybody together as Northwest European pagan. So if you're, you know, if you're a Druid, if you're heathen, if you're, you know, any of the pagan faiths, you get lumped in together. And I mean, on one hand, you know, nobody likes to be lumped in together. But on the other hand, if you need four Northwest European pagans to have circle, you're more likely to get them if you incorporate all those different faith groups. So, it's the fastest growing faith group. And a lot of prisons, especially in the Bible Belt, don't know what to do about that religion. And when I say have to, a lot of them don't. Legally, they have to.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, so I get letters sometimes from people who are incarcerated who say that, like, they'll get pagan books donated and then they just magically vanish, right? And you know, I'm not going to say if it's the chaplains directly or, you know, people who work there or other inmates. But there's still this, like, that the chapel library is huge, and like there's all these books on you know, the Judeo-Christian faiths, and then like you'll see this one small section where you have to like go get a librarian, and it's just not as accessible to get pagan books if they are there. And so, and keep in mind, this will vary state by state. Some states are a lot more eager to help people have the materials they need to change their lives, and then some, it's like pulling teeth to get books into the prison libraries, to get pagan volunteers in. And even though they're guaranteed their right to freedom of religion, they don't always get it.
Mm. That's unfortunate. Christopher Penzack, in his introduction to your book, he talks about pagan prison ministries. Are you involved with any of those?
I'm involved with Alexandria Temple. Because of COVID, we haven't been able to go in the last 18 months or so. But they're the ministry that actually came in when I was incarcerated. And they're the ministry that I went in with when pre-COVID.
So is that something that is widespread? It's great that you were able to access that and then it was made available to you. But is that like a very widespread movement, or is it just local to where you were?
Well, Alexandria Temple is just local, just in Colorado. Okay. However, when I was putting together the resource list for the back of Paganism for Prisoners, there's actually a lot more pagan ministries than I thought. And by a lot more, I think there's like 5 to 10. So it's not thousands, right? But, you know, these are 5 to 10 dedicated pagan ministries. Like I think one of them goes into San Quentin. There's one that goes into either North or South Carolina. There's another one that was forming in Arkansas. So they're there and they're starting to grow. And the impact that those temples make is huge. And I'm sure the incarcerated pagans that they serve really appreciate it.
So that's something that's there and it's growing and it just needs to grow some more until it becomes a force. You mentioned earlier,
yes.
And also you mentioned in your book that you used your time in prison to polish and your own like spirituality, to explore and to discover and to, you know, polish up your belief system. So in that sense, paganism was a very positive force in your life, and that time was a time that you spent very wisely. How would you advise other people when they're in difficult situations or situations that they can't get out of for whatever reason, to use that time in the same way that you used it for growth?
Well, something to understand is when you're incarcerated, there's one thing you have that most people don't have, and that's the gift of time. A lot of time. You know, you have time on lockdown to sit and meditate and to write and to think. And when you're incarcerated, this doesn't seem like a gift. It seems like, man, I, you know, have nothing to do. But so when you apply that to outside the walls of a prison, you know, it's utilizing that time. I believe that if you want something, you will make the time for it to happen. If it's important for you, you will prioritize it. Like I hear people all the time like, oh, I don't have time. And then they spend, you know, 5 hours on social media. You do have the time. You're just not prioritizing it. And I'm not a big fan of like, you know, I know that there's reasons, right? That there's reasons behind incarceration. There's reasons behind mental health, but that doesn't mean that you can't do anything about it. That doesn't mean that you can't take steps to make it better. Like you can either sit where you're at and nothing will change and you can just be okay with that, or you can start making steps towards the goals you want to achieve. So if you want to become like a high priestess in 8 years, start now. Take a class. Take an online class, pick up a book and read, practice a new magical technique. There are so many things you can do to get the process started. Just don't expect to jump from A to Z. You have to go A to B to C to D to E to F, you know, and this is something I have to remind myself of a lot, is because I want things to happen in my time. And we can't make time happen any quicker than it's going to. But you can take the initial steps right now, today, before you go to sleep. You can take a first step towards achieving your goal. And then you wake up tomorrow and you take a second step. And then maybe you don't get to it on the third day, but you pick it up on the fourth day. You know, and if you make a commitment like that and you follow through on it consistently, you'll be surprised how far you get. Every book I've ever written, my goal has been to write something every day. Now, sometimes that was a word. Sometimes it was 8 pages, but something every day. And, you know, eventually I achieved my goal. And that's what this is all about, is like finding those baby steps, you know, going introspectively. If you want to learn how to astral project, start somewhere. Start by building your meditation skills. Don't just assume you can't do it because it seems like this huge goal. Break it down into smaller steps that you can achieve.
I'm a firm believer in that, and that's a theme that comes up a lot in the conversations that we have on these shows, that basically anything's possible. Just give it time and attention, and you'll get there, or you'll find a better place to be along the way. So that is very wise advice. You had also brought up a few times in your book and partially in the conversation that giving people help before they're in a position where they need the help is something that's very important. How do you feel, what do you feel we should be doing as a society to try to prevent people from winding up in a prison?
We should make it okay to talk about emotions and feelings. Like, that should be mandatory, like starting in elementary school, middle school, high school. Like, let's talk about emotions. It doesn't have to be like, oh, look, so-and-so over there is crying. Let's make fun of them. That makes that person never feel like sharing their emotions again. You know, emotional intelligence is so important, and we completely neglect it in this society until, like, years later when you're an adult and you're like, oh, maybe I need therapy for all these things, you know? And really, if we start children off, like, talking about emotions, how do you feel? You know, gearing that to whatever grade level they're at. And by the time they're in high school, like, maybe they can have actual intelligent conversations about how they feel. And that's okay. And the person on the other end is like, hey, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I'm sorry I made you feel this way. And then we also have to remember that a lot of that almost everybody who's incarcerated has trauma, usually childhood trauma. To be the lucky one in my family to do the shadow work and, you know, to hopefully end the cycle. So if I ever have kids, that doesn't have to be their path, you know. But children, especially those that go through trauma, should be in counseling, you know, and I think all children should be in counseling. You know, you don't have to have trauma. You don't have to have, it really bothers me when people say something like, oh, I don't need to go to counseling because nothing's wrong with me. Everybody needs somebody to talk to sometimes. Everybody. And if we get away from this view that counseling or therapy or, you know, addressing mental health issues means that there's something wrong with you, if we can get away with that and normalize it, people will be so much healthier. And if they get healthier mentally, they'll get healthier spiritually. You know, and the two go hand in hand. I don't think that you can completely fix one without fixing the other. And, you know, when I say spirituality, I don't mean, you know, that they have to follow a certain religion or anything like that. I mean, feeding their spirit, feeding that spark inside you that gives you passion and that gives you life and that, you know, makes you want to wake up and greet the next day. That, you know, that spirit, that's addressing the spirit of a person, their spirituality. And religion's supposed to do that, but a lot of times religion falls short. So if we address feeding the spirit and we address mental health, and, you know, while we're at it, we should be doing more for physical health too. This, like, the diet that we have in this country is abhorrent. There are whole places in this nation where you cannot access fresh fruits and vegetables easily. It would take like a big long bus ride, you know, or they have to be brought in so they're super expensive. There's so many areas, but if we started with mental health and with feeding the spirit, I think that would go so far.
It's interesting that you bring up this topic. This is a topic that, again, we cover a lot on Major Stages and Sears. We just had a show maybe a week ago, a week and a half ago, I'm losing track of days. I've been so busy lately, so I apologize for that. But we had a magical group in Chicago sharing what they do to deal with nutrition and the very fact that beef is taxing the resources of our planet. So we did like a whole show on that, and other magicians have talked about how they work out with weights and what they do. So I have to invite you for one of those shows somewhere down the line if that's something that you're passionate about.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, I have a degree in integrative healthcare, so that's right up my alley.
Oh, awesome. Fantastic. I will definitely write your name down, and you'll get a call about that or an email about that shortly. So before people go in, we should encourage people to communicate more, and we should have systems in place that are able to identify problems or potential problems and take some action. So that's really great, and that's very important. And you also mentioned that spirituality should be something empowering. And you're in a position that you have a ministry, and your ministry is in the prisons. How can your ministry and other people's ministries, be they pagan or no, but who are working with incarcerated people, how can they help those people spiritually?
I think providing a listening voice, like we can't go in and we can't diagnose somebody, right? We can't say, oh, you have this or you have that. But I get to be in a unique position because I get to lead by example. Just the fact that I'm not a recidivism statistic, like, shows other people that they don't have to be a recidivism statistic either. They don't ever have to go back. And I think from a spiritual standpoint, we can go in with compassion. You know, you have to kind of keep a little bit of a distance, right? Like there's some things that you have to keep professional when you're working in a prison environment. You know, I'm not going to go in and talk about all the details of my personal life because it's not about me. It's about them. And I think that's the important thing to remember. It's about them. And if they need a sounding board, be the sounding board. If, you know, they need you to teach them how to cast circle, teach them how to cast circle. If you give them the opportunity to like let you know what they're interested in, what they need, and then build off that, really powerful things can happen. Like one of my most amazing memories is one Samhain when I got to go into a prison and we got to have circle in prison. And there were people in there who weren't pagan, but they were respectful. And so that's always been my view, is somebody doesn't have to be pagan to attend my groups. They just have to be there with a respectful curiosity and to be knowledgeable and open to questions. And I think the biggest thing for me is to not be embarrassed or shy, and to understand that sometimes questions aren't asked because somebody is trying to be rude. They're asked because people genuinely want to know.
Right.
So there has to be a maturity that we carry in there, you know, and leaving behind like any past reservations we might have towards other religious systems. Working on self is really vital to doing this kind of work. If you go in and your face mentally or physically or emotionally, they're going to know because some of the strongest empaths in the world are in prison, and they're going to know, and they're going to pick up on that. So, you know, being genuine but strong in yourself and knowing who you are and what you believe in and having those healthy boundaries because you've worked on yourself, those are vital to this kind of work.
And you had mentioned in your book that sometimes it was people with Native American spiritualities and even other, you know, spiritualities who showed an interest and participated in your religious activities.
Yeah, absolutely. I had people show up who were part of the Native American faith. People showed up who were Jewish, Catholic, Christian. Didn't know what they identified as. And you know what? Most of the time, I didn't know. Because I never asked. It just wasn't important to me. If they were there seeking knowledge, that's what was important to me.
And that's a very good practice to have. I have the same idea as well, you know, that a lot of people who show up to things that I do publicly are curious. You know, they've heard things and they want to see things now and learn a little bit more. So I've learned to recognize over the years that their questions are because they don't know. So they're comfortable enough to ask a question, and that's the only way they're gonna learn. So it's great what you're doing, and it's great that it's touching lives so powerfully. Now, there are systems in place in the prisons and outside the prisons. There are parole officers, there are counselors, there are all sorts of people who are involved with the process. What could they do to help the person spiritually and materially to make the process one less of retribution and punishment, but one of more growth and to get somebody past a certain point where they need to come back or they wind up coming back?
This is where it gets kind of tricky, because all you can do is give somebody the tools. You can't make them use them. So that would be my answer. Give them the tools. Believe them if they say, hey, I want to go to this thing. I'm going to be an hour late for curfew, but I'm going to be attending a full moon ritual. Give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, if somebody's being untruthful to you, it's going to come out. It always does. You know, so give them the benefit of the doubt. Ask questions. Oh, it says on here that you're pagan. Like, what does that mean to you? What do you believe? I genuinely want to know, because it'll help them to understand. What one of the most scarring experiences, as I mentioned earlier, was when I went into treatment and I was told, no, you're not pagan. That's just something you're interested in. And I held a resentment against that place for the next few years until I left because of that, because they told me that something that I believed that I held sacred to me wasn't important. It was insignificant. So making that effort to just understand, at least attempt to understand. Like, being pagan doesn't have to make sense to a parole officer. It doesn't have to be your faith. That's fine. But if somebody comes to you and they say, hey, this is what I believe, give it the same reverence and respect you would want somebody to give your faith. That's the biggest piece of advice I could give.
Now, you've mentioned before that you write a lot. Have you written any other books? Aside from the one coming out.
So I've got Paganism for Prisoners, Paganism on Parole. Llewellyn just sent me a third contract today, so there will be a third book coming out. Yeah, it's going to be a book of spells and meditations. I'm really looking forward to it. And my passion, though, is I've got a fiction book that's almost done and another one that I'm writing. And so that's kind of where I think my next life mission is to break into fiction. So if anybody listening is an agent, I'm just throwing that out there. But no, I've written, I'm going to be in a couple of Llewellyn's annuals. And I actually spent several years doing freelance articles that I ghost wrote. So you won't find them under my name, but articles on everything from like tower climbing to dental hygiene, because that's kind of how you pay your dues as a writer. You know, you spend a lot of time writing things that, you know, might not be your dream, but they help you gain experience and they help you gain credibility. And like, I've got like 8 more stories and like a couple more books I'm going to pitch to Llewellyn. So there's going to be a lot more for me.
Oh, that is incredibly awesome. So you found your spiritual path, and now you're finding your creative path, your life path. That's very exciting. Now, everyone in the course of living their life learns some life lessons, and you're writing about yours, so you're sharing them very generously. But for somebody who is young and feels that there isn't a lot of hope for them, that they'll never get the things that they want, that you know, their life is not going to be one of their choosing, what type of advice would you give them in their planning their future?
That's all you have to do is just don't quit. Consider consider that in the past 10 years, I went from somebody who my biggest goal was to keep a job for 3 months because I had never done that. And now I get to write all these new goals and all these new dreams because all these things that I wanted to accomplish, I did. And I didn't just sit and wait for it to happen. I took the steps to make it happen. So if there's anybody out there and you're listening and you're going through a tough time and you're thinking your goals are never going to happen, just keep going. Just keep going. Don't ever give up. If you want it bad enough, you will find a way to achieve it. And so I hear from a lot of young writers, you know, and they'll be like, hey, can you give me feedback on this? And here's the thing, anybody who ever asked me for feedback on their writing, most of the time I'll say no. If I do give you feedback, though, it's going to be honest. And, you know, I would much rather tell you, hey, your grammar, your style needs a lot of work, because then you have something you can work on. You know, if mm-hmm. I'm just like, this is good, then how are you supposed to improve? How are you supposed to grow? We have this idea in society that placating people is helpful, and it's not. It's not. If people need to improve on something, you can let them know, and you can do it with compassion and you can do it with caring, but let them know, hey, you know, I recognize that English isn't your first language. I would take a couple English classes, get more familiar with punctuation and grammar and build from there. There's nothing wrong with not being perfect at what you're trying to achieve. I still have to work on my writing. I still have to work on a lot of things. And I'm glad that I have that, because if I had to just be who I was 10 years ago, oh man, would that suck. But instead of having to be who I was 10 years ago, I've gotten to grow and change and adapt and improve. And in another 10 years, I'm excited. I'm excited mm-hmm. to see what that looks like. So be excited and be patient and keep going.
And I can vouch for that too. Somebody on one of my podcasts, I've been writing magazine articles. So they suggested I do anthologies. So I hadn't thought of doing anthologies, but I submitted something to an anthology. And now I've been in like 19 anthologies already. And the time passes whether you do anything with it or not. But you might as well be doing something right. You really want to do in that time. And time is a gift. It's a great disciplinarian too. It's Saturn. But it's a great gift once you recognize that the choice on how you're going to spend your moments is yours.
Yeah, absolutely. We all have the power to change our lives. We all have the power to make choices that are going to make our lives either better or worse. And you know how you'll hear people say, like, I don't have a choice. I even say this. I don't know if it's in Paganism for Prisoners or Paganism on Parole, but I say this in there, that you always have a choice. It's just not always a choice you like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a handful of situations that you completely have no choice, right? But you have a choice in your reaction, you know? And even if you're given a choice of, like, go work for a job you don't like or be homeless, that's a choice. They don't always have to be like a good choice and a bad choice. And sometimes they're two awesome choices. Like, do I want to go on vacation to London or do I want to go on vacation to Paris? That's also a choice. So, you know, looking at things less like you're the victim of life. You can be the victim of circumstances sometimes, but nobody is life's victim. Like, make choices, make changes.
Very true and very empowering once you really let that sink in. We have around 10 minutes left, and I'm excited to hear, what's your vision for the future? We know already that it has to do with paganism, that it has to do with writing fiction. What else do you see for yourself in the next 10 years or so?
World domination. No, I'm just kidding.
It's doable. People have done it.
It is, right? If I start taking the steps now.
There you go.
I just want to live a life that fits my dreams and the work I've put in. Eventually, I want to spend some time living in another country just because I didn't ever think I'd be able to do that. And now I don't believe in impossible. So I see that, and I see many more books, and I would love to speak and do workshops and put together classes for people. And these are the kinds of things that I see. Right now, though, I'm letting things happen. I'm trying not to be too concrete with my plans. I'm letting the universe unfold before me, because sometimes when you do that, you get things beyond your wildest dreams, things you couldn't have wished for.
Very, very true as well. I got to invite you on my career shows too. So you're going to get a few invitations for more shows.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Conversation, but I'm looking forward to future conversations. How can people tap into your world? How can they find you online, on social media? Where can they get your books?
Social media, Facebook, I'm at Awyn Dawn Official. That's AWYN. DAWN Official. Instagram and Twitter, I'm at Awyn Dawn. Once again, AWYN. My book is available from Llewellyn, from Amazon, from Barnes & Noble, or one of my favorite options is your local metaphysical bookstore. And if they don't carry it, be like, oh my gosh, please carry this book, because it'll really help me out. And then they'll order the book, and then you can buy it from them. And then you're not only helping an emerging pagan author, that would be moi, but you're also helping support your local metaphysical bookstores. So all kinds of ways that you can get that.
I just liked your page on Facebook as you were speaking.
Yay!
That is a great thing. And I was a metaphysical bookstore owner for a while, so thank you for that. I'm not doing that anymore, but that was on my bucket list, and my wife and I did that for a number of years. And you're on the author's
list.
You're an author already, so doing the workshops and the classes, that'll come as a matter of course. You'll be invited to that before you know it. Thank you so very much, Awyn Dawn, for spending this time with us. You're awesome. You're doing awesome things, and may you continue to have your life journey unfold in wonderful and miraculous ways. And I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, too. Thank you so much, Hercules.
Okay, be well, and thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you're sitting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley, who's a pagan musician. Golden bough at the turning of night.
Lady of Moon.